Hello and welcome to the FinTech Newscast. My name's John, and this week we'll be looking at some predictions for 2020, a look at what ESG criteria is slipping into credit underwriting, and why FinTech challengers may not conquer the entire banking market. All this and more when you subscribe to the FinTech Newscast. All right, Happy New Year. Let's get going for the new year. Lots going on, always something new. And with me to talk about that new stuff is Steve.
John, Happy New Year. How are you?
Great, great. Made it this far. So,
to the first week.
Yeah.
No war yet.
Yeah, some other little things outside of FinTech are happening as well.
Before we dive in, John, any 2020 resolutions regarding FinTech for you?
Resolutions? Stay away.
Stay away from everything.
No. As we'll get into, it's going to be a mix of whoever serves your needs best. So I have dabbled in some FinTech products, but not as heavily as probably they would like.
Interesting. So maybe just try more new FinTech stuff?
Try more new FinTech stuff. Maybe get an Apple Card.
Nice.
I'll go with that. Yeah. So that way I can say I bank with Goldman Sachs.
Yeah, of course.
Yes, quite
yes,
right.
Yes, 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 yes. Yes.
So what's going to happen in 2020 then?
That is a good question. There's a really interesting report out by Forrester that kind of highlights a few things that they see as shaping the future of banking and technology in 2020. And we'll go through them somewhat quickly. But the first one is actually around kind of a boring-ish topic, but it's actually regulation. So as you know,
boring.
I know, so boring, right? So I'm sure that if you logged onto your website from a California IP address, you've seen this new banner saying that, you know, you can select to not have your information shared and not have your data sold to other people without your consent. That's all part of CCPA, the California Consumer Protection Act, right?
How thorough is this thing?
I think we've yet to see the implications of this, but I think that it's a new kind of phase in the way in which we as customers understand and analyze our data. So I haven't actually read the bill. I've just seen the after effects of it in terms of what I visit. But I know that it severely limits what companies can do with your data, which I think is a great step. You know, most companies operating in the U.S. will adhere to CCPA standards.
Yeah, I saw that. Even though the company is based in California or they have California customers, they're just going to apply it to the entire country.
And it makes sense.
It's just easier. I mean, it'd be such a hassle to differentiate.
It would be. It would be a logistical nightmare.
Might as well give everybody their privacy rights.
Exactly. Yeah. Who knew? It's the same way in which we have more strict auto emission standards in California than the rest of the country, and those get applied basically at a national
level. They're
not
going to make two different cars.
Exactly. Right. Yeah. So Forrester highlights here how in 2020 we'll see a lot of emphasis on regulatory compliance and also on new ways in which users can control and manage their data.
So CCPA, it lets you do what exactly?
It lets you be able to tell companies that collect your data to not sell that data to other companies. It also allows you, in some cases, to delete that data from their servers.
So you can request, so you have to send in a request?
You send in a request. I think you can do it online, but you can essentially, you can see the data they're collecting. You can have them not collect the data, and then you can also have them delete the data as well.
Yeah, Google requires you send a handwritten letter.
Of course. via Telegram to a PO box in Delaware. But they'll eventually get to it. Another sort of corollary to this is the fact that PSD2 will actually get cleaned up in the UK.
What's PSD2?
So it's the Payment Services Directive, the sequel, number 2.
Number 2,
that's basically a way in which customers can use any sort of banking mechanism in the UK to make payments. It's one tool in the quiver of UK regulators, where they have basically come up with ways to increase competition and kind of put control back in the hands of the users in the UK.
Nice use of metaphor there.
Thank you. I just watched the Robin Hood movie, so it's in my mind. Yeah, absolutely.
There we go. So you can make all kinds of payments from all different kinds of accounts, and the requirement is that the people have to be able to accept any type of account.
Precisely that, yeah. And the rule went into effect, I believe, in September of 2019. But now there will be some further changes and some further kind of tweaking of the rules to make it more consumer-friendly in 2020. Now on to number 2 on our list here. increase competition and collaboration between fintechs and banks, which really makes sense, right?
So that's going to continue to happen.
It's going to continue to happen.
I could have made this prediction.
I know.
How much
did
Forrester get for this report?
Yeah, this is kind of a low-hanging fruit one. But it's basically, we've seen things like Citibank partnering with Google to provide the Google checking account sometime this year. We saw JP Morgan partner with Airbnb to offer virtual checking accounts, which is pretty cool as well. And basically, Forrester sees this as the initial steps and what could become a tighter integration between big tech, fintechs, and banks as well.
And bank tech.
And bank tech. Yeah. And tech. And all the other, all the other, all the other techs.
Everybody's
basically
working with everybody.
They are, yeah, yeah. And to round things up, we have a third prediction, which actually it's more along the lines of what I love, which is that we may see traditional Main Street or Wall Street banks, rather, really try to differentiate their services, especially in the digital channel. So they're looking for ways to increase their revenue because we have things like Dodd-Frank, which decrease the amount the banks can charge for fees,
all the trading stuff.
Yeah. So, you know, they have to find ways to, you know, keep that revenue going. So they're going to look to maybe expose their services.
How will those poor bankers manage to keep their bonuses
Right?
up?
Yeah. Yeah.
It's a quandary.
It is a quandary. And according to Forrester, they will use this as a way to, or rather they will, they're continuing in this trend by maybe providing the funds to a lot of the digital online unsecured lenders, which I think we talked about a few weeks ago.
Balance sheet as a service.
Exactly. So that could be the next play for banks, is become banking as a service. I saw an article in the journal last week that highlighted how there has been an explosion of unsecured lending by online companies as well in the U.S. at a rate that really exceeds anything we've seen until 2008, which, you know, that has some warning signs.
Good thing capitalism never runs amok.
Never runs amok. So I think that we may see banks get into this space now and become the funding source for all these online unsecured lenders.
Yeah. You know, a lot of these predictions really tie into this interview I was just reading from Alan McIntyre. He's the senior managing director at Banking for Accenture. And, you know, how these kind of tie into the strategy that all of these players are looking at. One of his more interesting takes, and one that we kind of course, we're very pro-tech, very pro-fin.
Sure.
Finance. And love to see the combination. And, you know, I tend to be very Pollyanna-ish about technology. I love the new thing, which is why I like the show Black Mirror, because it kind of brings me back to earth on, you know, maybe that's not all going to be good. Maybe that nuclear technology maybe can use for negative things.
Yeah. There's I love Kara Swisher, the sort of, you know, I think she writes for the Times now. And the question that she poses to a lot of the tech people that she interviews is, you know, how can your technology be used in a Black Mirror episode? Like, that's a question that everybody should have.
That's what I need to ask myself more, and that's what that's really done. Oh, I love mechanical dogs and little Abo robots.
Yes. I love being able to shoot bullets.
And there's one that really shows you how that's probably not going to end up well for us.
Yeah, it's odd.
Yeah, they hunt really, really well. He has a hard time seeing how a lot of these companies, and he calls out like Chime, for example, I struggle to see their valuations when they're just doing checking and savings, and they're not, and maybe some basic consumer loans, and they're not doing the things that would create a lot of profit.
Well, John, it's about getting the customers first, right? First the customers, then
revenue. Well, that is one of the strategies. So he talks about there's three strategies that the challengers can take, and he gets into the ones for the incumbents and the smaller banks as well. So one, he says, is become a digital traditional bank. So build up your balance sheet, take a more balanced overall approach. And he gives us an example of Atom Bank, ATOM, out of the UK, as opposed to trying to get as many people into your ecosystem, into your platform as possible. So like Monzo Bank and Revolut and those guys.
Starling and all those guys.
Build up. And then they can use that heft, all those customers, if they get some small percentage of them. And he talks about how To be profitable, then it can still do very, very well. So he talks about like how Spotify, most of the users are free. They never pay anything. But the ones who pay are create a great business anyway. So it could be that kind of model. And then the third one is like building a marketplace in which you're the intermediary for the products and services. So he also talks about the strategy for a small bank as well. You know, like the strategy, the ideal strategy for all the players. And he has a lot of good points. I'll just mention, he mentioned Walmart as being one of the leaders and one of the top wallets in the United States.
Fascinating. I didn't know. I had no idea they even had a wallet.
I don't know if he's counting it on value, it's actually getting used. So right. Maybe there's a lot more Google Pay. I'm sure there's a lot more Google Pay users, but they're not really using it.
Got it.
So I'm assuming that the Walmart users are actually using it to pay in their stores, and they're kind of in there in the Walmart ecosystem, if you will.
It's fascinating.
So that they're coming out of nowhere. And he mentions that they're not getting the credit as being in financial services as strongly as they really are.
Right.
In any case, for small companies, I thought this was interesting, is you can rent your balance sheet. So this is what you were mentioning with like Cross River Bank, Web Bank, and these others that enable in a healthy way, I guess, enabling.
Healthy-ish,
usually that has a negative connotation.
Yeah,
right?
Yeah.
But in this case, it's one of the bases for fintechs. And of course, there's the post-WeWork world where there's a lot more pressure on the challenger banks, who are depending on continued investment money, to, as he says it, articulate their long-run model.
So basically, how will you make money?
How are you going
once
to make
money?
Once the
VC money,
Yeah. So he talks about the future. Banking will no longer be monogamous. You don't have a bank that you go to for all your services. You're just going to, slut around with any fintech or large...
Sounds like my kind of world. I love
large,
it.
Yeah. Large place that'll help you out.
Yeah.
And delayering of the industry. I love all these terms.
Yeah.
Oh, yeah. I'm working with a delayering the financial industry. And
sounds a little risque.
Yeah. A lot of stuff in this article, and you can look at the full report. Like I said, we'll put the links in there. So if to kind of refine, articulate your strategy, if you're at a fintech, it's a good read.
So John, what's going on in the world of ESG? Which actually I thought
you read my mind.
I did. That's ESP, not ESG.
Oh, okay. Well, let's see. This is environmental, social responsibility and governance issues related to, anything. But in this case, for credit underwriting. So there's an article in the Wall Street Journal. So you know it must be true.
Fascinating.
Saying that banks are taking a closer look. Actually, this is a survey by Fitch Ratings that took that look at 182 banks and saw that one of the things they were focusing on is how much does ESG... this kind of environmental and responsible kind of lending affect, how much is that impacting in credit decisions?
So just to clarify here, this is not what percentage of your portfolio goes to, say, environmental or social companies, but whether the companies that you want to lend to adhere to this ESG practices, right?
Yeah, however that bank would define it. So the banks are starting to take a look at if they make this loan to a private prison or to a gun manufacturer.
A fracking company.
One of those fracking companies.
Right.
Are we in Battlestar Galactica?
Right, yeah.
yeah, those fracking companies, they're all sketchy, actually.
So that's a
short way to say, if it's a sketchy kind of company,
it's just a fracking
by
company.
Somebody's definition anyway.
Yeah.
At least they want to know their exposure and see if that's going to, because that's going to affect their reputation risk and, whether you agree with that or not. That's if you're running a company, you have to think about that sort of thing.
Which actually we saw earlier, I think we saw the Q2 of last year, where a lot of banks were pulling out of funding either the NRA or gun manufacturers in the U.S.
Yes, right.
Except
for
Wells
sure.
Fargo, I think. I think they're still supporting the NRA.
No, I think they're out. The NRA? I'm not sure. I think they are.
Or
they were the main bank And I think they still are. It was the gun manufacturers they had pulled out of, right?
Got it.
But not the NRA, right?
Yeah. So that's a
but it's a big consideration.
Example, yeah.
And they get a lot of flack. I mean, nobody wants to have organized. you want to wear a flak jacket against your reputation risks.
Yes.
And, you know, nobody wants to be the target of boycotts. And
of course not. Protests. Sort of who needs that? Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. So if you're... if you're looking at things like Goldman Sachs has been recently, they've been doing so much with being consumer friendly. You know, I always think of them hidden behind walls.
It's true.
But they're getting so much more, you know, transparent, I guess the word is.
They
just pulled out of, at least more sensitive to the outside world. You see them reacting to things. And one example is they just announced that they were pulling out of coal and Arctic drilling businesses.
Good.
And maybe they didn't have any anyway, but I would announce that too. FinTech Newscast is no longer going to support fracking or coal mining activities, coal refining, and anything that's carbon neutral. We don't support here.
That is our pledge to you, our listener.
I'm sure Goldman had some business interests, and they're pulling out because they're expanding in the retail area and all that.
I'm sure they did, but I wonder. You know, I'm a bit of a cynic when it comes to this stuff. How much of this is just greenwashing?
I knew you were going to say greenwashing.
Yes.
Tell me, what's greenwashing
for our audience? It's using this stuff. It's basically, you know, promoting your virtues about the environment and your carbon neutrality and all that kind of stuff, when basically the underlying business is still shitty for the economy.
I thought greenwashing was what you did after you came back from Burning Man.
That's the other greenwashing. That's the Bay Area greenwashing.
I'm sure there is some of that.
It just seems like a bald attempt to essentially institutionalize greenwashing.
See, this is the type of cynical view I need to be. I need to not just take things at face value and
they're
becoming good guys.
It does show
that there is a pressure when you do when there are people protesting and letting their views known that there's this has an effect on businesses, and you know, this is kind of a good thing that people have an effect. People have can make a difference when something like this pops up that they don't like. So in any case, the article points out that there's not a lot of actual lending decisions based purely on an ESG consideration, but they're becoming more aware. They want to keep track of where their exposures might be. So, I mean, they don't want to get caught off guard if laws change or some protest does come up. They know what their exposures are right away, having more granularity on their credit exposures and being ready for a world that's getting more friendly with cancel culture.
More woke. It's more a very woke world. Yes, interesting.
Yeah. I tweeted against this thing, so I'm really woke, right?
Of course you are. Yeah, I wonder. Of course, this is kind of the whole ESG thing is sort of a moving target, right? Like I've heard a really interesting concept.
What's acceptable and what's not acceptable?
Exactly. And the fact that in 20 years, we maybe will look back and say companies that were funding all this, you know, corporate farming were evil and sort of destroying, you know, both our diets and our environment. So I think other things may fall under the ESG bucket, but I don't know. I'm a cynic. It sounds like greenwashing, but I do like to see at least nominal or PR
things
changes.
Things do get called out more. You know, did you see the Ricky Gervais monologue?
Only the monologue.
And the Golden Globes.
Loved every
second.
Where
he calls out Apple. He's like, oh, you're working for a company that runs sweatshops in China.
Absolutely.
And, you know, Tim Cook was in the audience.
He was. They panned to him.
Yeah, that was before. I wanted to see after the joke how
his reaction. Yeah, yeah, yeah. It's pretty interesting. It's also
amazing. So you do end up getting called out on these things. Even I mean, it's not Apple's companies directly. They're hiring.
Sure, it's their subcontractors and all that kind of
stuff.
Yeah,
that
absolutely.
Huge company,
Foxconn. Yeah,
Foxconn or Hanhai Precision.
Sure.
That's actually running the company. And I don't know if it's fair to. They've addressed some things. I don't know if it's still sweatshop, but it's probably not great. But yeah, I mean, that same thing could happen to you. You suddenly get called out, and you want to know what your exposure is. Good to. The companies are becoming Well, it's part of prudent risk management that they're ready for these things that
it,
could happen.
It sounds like it, absolutely. Point conceded, absolutely.
Yeah, yeah. Fast food. No more lending to companies that cause obesity. And,
exactly.
I mean, they could just pop out.
No. Nestle, no candy companies.
Who knows?
Or even Apple. Apple does all this rare earth mining, right? That's really harmful to the
environment. Not them directly.
Of course, it's their subcontractors. Sorry, but
no, yeah. It's the customers who buy it.
Exactly.
And create the demand.
Yeah. Yeah, but they make it so enticing. That new iPhone
is
so cool.
Easy. That Big Mac is just right there.
It's just right there, and it's so cheap. It's like $3 for a Big Mac.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, yeah, so interesting. You know, you never know what you're going to have to deal with next. All right, now it's time for our final bite, where we take a look at a number and the crazy story behind it.
I got to say that I love my final bite.
Oh,
it's so interesting. I'm such a nerd for this stuff.
If you can't see it, but he's patting himself on the back right now.
I am. My final bite is $1.6 billion. What is that number, you may ask?
$1.6 billion, okay.
It's a big number, right? That is the amount of money that Starbucks has in store value card liabilities. Starbucks has, by dint of their app.
Oh, is that just points that people have earned?
No. It's actually dollars and cents. It's basically whenever somebody gives you a Starbucks gift card, right? So for say $20, and you keep it in your wallet, that's $20 that you've essentially lent to Starbucks at no fee. And because of their usage of gift cards and the Starbucks app, which you can use to pay for stuff, they essentially have $1.6 billion of free debt out there. It's amazing. And you as a consumer is helping Starbucks expand by giving them access to this amazing pool of capital. So it's a combination of money that you may have in your Starbucks account if you use your phone to pay for Starbucks. It's a gift card. Maybe you lose a gift card as well. So the number that I've heard actually is 10%. That's how much money customers lose, or that's the break.
I was going to say, yeah.
Yeah. So essentially, they're getting free money from you from having all the gift cards. And they're also getting free money on top of that by having you lose the card when you get it, and then you never use it.
They make it extra slippery now.
They do, yes.
So slide out of
it blends right into the background. And yeah. The third one is that if you happen to use the Starbucks app on your phone to pay for stuff, that allows Starbucks to bypass the credit card rails, and they also get to keep those 1-2% that they would have paid Visa and MasterCard to process their transactions.
Saving money is like making money.
Absolutely. So it's just a really fascinating way. And by show of scale, also, another company that has a lot of stored value liabilities is also PayPal.
Yeah.
Or Float, yeah, it's PayPal. Theirs is actually $20 billion. But they're more in the financial system, so that makes more sense.
Yeah,
but Starbucks,
right.
Huge fintech player. Who knew?
I could live on that float, yeah?
Yeah, I'm sure we all could.
I'll take a 0.01% of that.
Yeah, I'll take anything from that.
Yeah, all right, yeah, thanks. Always something interesting. So my final bite is 4. 4 is the number of new segments that Goldman Sachs will be reorganized into, and they're doing that so they can emphasize their, among other things, emphasize their retail part of their business, the Marcus, the Apple Card kind of stuff. Those were previously kind of hidden in other kinds of segments.
Mm-hmm.
But now there's a consumer and wealth management segment.
And that's the Marcus and just the traditional.
Yeah, all the stuff that normal people like you and me could have access to. And the ones that we don't have access to are global markets,
mm-hmm.
investment banking.
Yep.
And unless you're a qualified investor, maybe asset management.
So it's basically a way for them to highlight the fact that they're more of a consumer-facing bank now and not so much an investment bank for the mega-rich.
Yes, right. Yeah, they're falling more and more in line and becoming, for lack of a better word, just another large bank.
Wall Street comes to Main Street. I love it.
Yeah. They were the whitest of the white shoe kind of guys.
Yeah.
Now they'll just be like slugging it out with J.P. Morgan and Bank of America and those are slobs.
So I've heard that a lot of the impetus for this change is the fact that they wanted to really highlight a lot of the traction they're getting in the consumer space, because their stock has been so stagnant. So Goldman Sachs stock has been I think compared to JP Morgan especially and to Bank of America has been really stagnant, and they wanted to really see how this growth in consumer lending and consumer-facing products can really affect the bottom line.
Yeah, negatively. Actually, you know, that's been very expensive for them to expand things out at, like Apple Pay and Marcus and all that. These are new efforts. And to show that, this new consumer division just generated $124 million in pre-tax earnings in the third quarter. Because of all these startup costs and they're scaling up. So maybe it's a good way to show, like, they're starting from a small amount, still making a profit already, but that this would be a bigger part of the business. So nothing to really brag about yet for them, but it does show those efforts separately now from the rest of the their businesses.
Great.
Yeah, so relatively tiny profits. And heading away from trading and investment banking, that would be less and less.
Which I think they were doing already. They were really de-emphasizing the whole trading thing and becoming more of a consumer-facing stuff, right?
Yeah. So this reorg is just part of that. Actually, there's something that's interesting. You know, Goldman has been a public company for at least 10 years now, and they're going to have their first investor day.
Wow.
Which seemed kind of weird for a public company not to have one, like a Goldman Sachs size company. But yeah, so in January, they're going to have their first ever investor day. Again, this whole becoming a normal bank. It won't be that big a deal to be a Goldman Sachs client anymore.
Nice.
All right, but it is a big deal when you listen to the FinTech Newscast. That means you're smart and well-informed.
It sure is. At least we hope so.
So hit subscribe to keep up with, continue to keep up with the latest in FinTech news. And thanks for listening.
See you next week.